And now we will have Carla Benitete, Director of Communications and Product Services of ICANN, for her presentation of the overview of the new GTLD program and overarching issues. Doug will also join the discussion as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. So thank you very much for coming here. We have quite a good audience here today. We also have about 34 people in the chat room. I'm going to be giving you an overview about the new GTLD program, the new generic top-level domain program. Starting with ICANN's mission and the new generic top-level domains, a brief background about the generic top-level domains that we have nowadays in the market, the policy development overview, and some highlights of the implementation process. ICANN's mission and new GTODs. So here we illustrate two different documents in which ICANN has mentioned new GTODs, or has mentioned GTODs as an introduction. Define and implement a predictable strategy for selecting new TODs, and you find that in ICANN's U.S. government agreement, 1998 and present. Fostering choice and competition in provision of domain name registration services. ICANN's founding document in 1998 also says that the new corporation ultimately should oversee policy for determining the circumstances under which new GTODs are to be introduced into the root system. Brief historical background. So we have the generic top-level domains and the country code top-level domains, over 250 country codes and 21 generic top-level domains in the root. There were 8 that predated ICANN's formation, then 7 were added in the 2000 round, and 6 were added in the 2004 round, and probably most of you will be familiar with .asia here. So we took the experiences of the previous rounds to learn what would be good to be included in the process of this round. Some of the key benefits of new GTODs: to encourage and foster creativity, innovation, consumer choice, competition into the domain name space. Also, to create or help to create community and corporate identity on the internet. And new added value for users for the domain name system. Also important is the introduction of the internationalized domain names, or IDNs. And Doug will be speaking a little bit later today about IDNs, so I'm not going to extend too much on that. But basically, when you see IDNs, IDNs are being introduced into the marketplace with two ways. One is new GTODs program, and the other one is the fast track program. IDNs are available today at the second and also third level. There is not specified that. I know, for instance, .hk, you know, for Hong Kong has had IDNs in Chinese since 2006 on the second and third levels. We also have some GTODs that accommodate IDNs. They have existed as a second level since 2003. And the way IDNs have been introduced into the market, especially on the CCTOD side, has been not very, has really varied from registry to registry. Some of them introduced second levels only. Some of them introduced second and third levels. Some of them chose one language. Some of them chose multiple languages. So, for instance, if you go to .pl in Poland, they don't have, they have Chinese, they have Hebrew, they have, you know, many different languages. If you go to .hk, the language available is Chinese. So the way registries have adopted IDNs, or CCDODs have adopted IDNs, varies a lot from registry to registry. The same applies to GTODs. And I think partly is because how they view their customers, or what the demand is, but part of it is also how technically able they are to introduce IDNs into the marketplace. So as I said, we're going to be talking a little bit more about IDNs later today. Here you just have a graph that is showing, you know, what we have today versus what we're trying to accomplish in the future. And in the future, when we talk about introducing internationalized domain names on the top level, we're actually saying that we have IDN characters on the right of the dot. So policy approach. There's an organization within ICANN called GENESO. And the GENESO has developed for basically 2 years a policy that actually guides all of the development work that we do for the new GTOD program. And some of the approach that they took is that new GTODs will benefit registrant choice and competition. Implementation plan should also allow for IDMs. New GTODs should not cause security and stability issues. And protection of various appropriate interests require objection and dispute resolution processes. The implementation process today. So how did we go about developing? So the GENESO took 2 years, developed the policy. The board, the ICANN board, has approved the policy in June, July 2008. That was during the Paris ICANN meeting. And ICANN staff, as we develop the program, we are sharing the development with the community and getting the community input into the process, which is part of ICANN's way to really work. And how we did that was to publish the applicant guidebook. The applicant guidebook really outlines all of the process and all of the requirements that future applicants for new generic top-level domains will have to follow. We posted a draft applicant guidebook, version 1, also called DAGV1, which is an acronym that I really don't like, but it's been used. We published that in November 2008. It went through a public comment period, which means that everybody around the world had the opportunity to comment on what they read and say, we like this, we don't like this, we should, you know, amend maybe this part of the process, you should introduce new things into this process, and so forth. The applicant guidebook was posted in 6 languages, and we chose the languages from the United Nations, really, the 6 United Nations languages. So we took the first version of the applicant guidebook, looked at all of the public comments, made a summary. So there's a summary analysis of all of the comments, and there were over 300 at this point. And we internally looked at everything and started, again, redesigning the process based on the feedback. Then in March 2009, we posted again the version 3 of the applicant guidebook for public comments. And that follows an analysis report for the community. So you know, without having to actually read through all the comments, you know what the comments were. And you also have the response from ICANN staff on each of the comments made. So I suggest that the best document right now to read on the new GTODs is the applicant guidebook version 2, and also the analysis of the public comments that followed that. Publication of explanatory memoranda and public comment analysis. So the analysis is what I mentioned. We really look at the comments and we analyze the comments that are being made with the response of staff. The explanatory memoranda are a series of papers with different topics that really explain a little bit more in depth some of the process and the criteria choices that are made in the new GTOD program. We really didn't want to have the applicant guidebook to be too big and too difficult for people to handle. So that's why we added the explanatory memorandum on the side to help people understand why certain choices are made. For example, cost considerations, morality and public order, and the third-party rights protection. You know, so there's different kinds of explanatory memoranda. If you take a look at the applicant guidebook is divided into modules or chapters. And we have tried to structure or tried to post the explanatory memoranda that is basically aligned with each module or chapter. So if you go to the new GTOD page, you will see module 1 and then the documents that belong to module 1 and all the explanatory memoranda that would help you to understand in depth what goes on in that module 1 and so forth. So the explanatory memorandum is also an interesting reading for you to have a better understanding of the background and the reasoning for making some decisions into the process and criteria. We continue asking for feedback from the community to guide the development of the process. And how do we do that? We do that with publishing again another draft of the applicant guidebook, and we're running now into the version 3. we are planning on posting that before the Seoul meeting, ICANN Seoul meeting that happens in a few months. We also have other types of publications for different topics, like, for instance, IRT, and Doug is going to explain to you a little bit more that has to do with trademark protection issues, and we have specific documents that were published in relation to that with proposal solutions and, you know, so forth. So it's not only the applicant guidebook and the explanatory memoranda. There's also additional documents and additional work that is being made in parallel that supports all this process development and engages, you know, hopefully engages the community to participate in this development process. We also work with community experts to address some of the selected issues. And what do we mean by community experts is, for instance, on root zone scaling, we have some technical experts from the community that help us with this issue. Trademark protection, we have the IPC, which is the intellectual property constituency of ICANN, and several members that are helping us with some of the trademark issues and so forth. We also have hired different consultants in the development process that internally help us with some of the processes that you see. So where are we? So we continue to balance the desire to move ahead with the launch plans while addressing the community-raised concerns. And I like to use one of the parallels that Doug does for this. It's like we have one foot on the accelerator and one foot on the brake for this one. So we're moving ahead, but we're moving very cautiously, and we're trying to address as much as possible and as fast as possible all of the concerns that the community raises and continues to raise. We're working on the applicant guidebook version 3, and we expect to post that soon. And we are actively seeking comments through the participation on overarching issues dedicated wiki. And Doug will speak to the overarching issues right after my presentation. And if you go again to the new GTOD program page, you will see a link to the wiki. And if you want to make comments or if you want to contribute to the specific issues that are identified in this wiki, please do so. And probably this is an important piece of it, our tentative launch schedule is for the beginning of 2010. Now I'm going to speak a little bit about the program itself. So we have the GeneSol development for 2 years. The board approved the program. We work, we publish several documents for processes and criteria, and we're working with the community to refine all of the processes and criteria that are part of the program. So what this program means? So this program has all of the information that an applicant needs. So the applicant guidebook has all the information that the applicant needs in order to apply for a GTOD. So it provides a timely, hopefully clear, roadmap for the applicant describing the application and the evaluation processes. And it's very one of the things that were very important for us, or the principles that was very important for us every time we looked at a part of the process to be developed is to always check, is this something that is continuing to preserve the domain name system stability and security? Among all other kinds of principles of the program, care and conservatism. So while we have, you know, trying to do processes that are efficient and we're trying to move ahead with things, we are always taking into account the protection of registrants, as I mentioned before, the domain name stability and security. The valuation fees are planned to cover costs. So as you know, ICANN is a non-for-profit organization, and we are using methods to calculate the cost on doing this development, and the fees that you see associated with this application process are fees that are meant to recover our costs. We also, ICANN intends to provide a clear, predictable roadmap for the applicants, and as I said, right now, the way we're doing that or attempting to do that is by having the applicant guidebook and some process flows. We have also an objection and dispute resolution process that apply in some cases. The application process. So it's open, predetermined application period. I'm going to speak a little bit more about that when you see some of the flows. will be web-based. So we have a system that is being developed that is called TAS, that stands for TOD Application System. And what's going to happen is that applicants for new GTODs will register in the system and lodge all of their answers and supporting documentations into the system. Evaluators will also be able to register and access the system to see all of the applications and documentation. Requires completion of applicant guidebook. So the applicant guidebook, again, is the roadmap. And we're still evolving. So the process is by no means finished. There are several things that we still need to address. And when you see the applicant guidebook version 3, if you look at the applicant guidebook version 1, version 2, version 3, you see the evolution of it. So it's still time for you to participate and give your input. Who is the applicant for new GTODs? And probably this is, to me at least, one of the most important parts, because the applicant for new GTODs is any public or private established entity from anywhere in the world. So even though TAS, at least for now, for this round, the application will be in English and the system is in English, we expect applicants from all over the world, public and private companies, not individuals. Everybody in the application process must follow step-by-step rules and requirements that are pre-published. All the applicants must demonstrate that they have the organizational, operational, and technical and financial capability. A TOD, or a new generic top-level domain, is to be run as a business. An applicant for a new GTOD is applying not to buy a domain name, not to put together a website, not to reserve a domain name. An applicant for a new GTOD is applying and committing to a business, a registry business. And running a registry business is quite a complex process. You know, people that run here a registry, like, for instance, .asia, if you have an opportunity for, you know, to ask them, they're going to tell you, you know, there are several layers of technical requirements, there are several layers of, you know, administrative requirements. You need to understand how this industry works. So when you apply for a new GTOD, you're committing to a business, you're committing to an industry, you're committing to certain standards. There's an application fee, which applies to everybody, which is $185,000. There's some other fees that depending on the path that an application takes. So everybody pays $185,000 at the beginning, and then depending on the path that an application takes, some additional fees may apply. If the application gets a dispute resolution, or is a dispute, an objection, some fees might apply there. But it's very important also for the applicants to understand that, let's say they pay $185,000 for the application, the applications go through, and this applicant is granted the GTOD, or the GTOD is delegated to this applicant. There is an ongoing financial requirement for this registry as well. Open versus community applications. We don't really have categories. However, a community-based GTOD is a GTOD that is operating for the benefit of a community consisting of a restricted population. And the GNSO developed that process because they really wanted to help, or they really wanted to safeguard, so to speak, communities around the world. So, for instance, if somebody applied for .Navajo and had absolutely nothing to do with the Navajo community, there was going to be an opportunity for the Navajo community either to object, or there's going to be a process that people would, somebody that represents the Navajo community would be able to demonstrate the legitimacy of that representation and apply for a GTOD. So if somebody, when you apply for a GTOD, you get into the TAS system, and then you're going to be asked whether or not you are applying for a community-based. And if you apply for a community-based, you need to understand there are some requirements that will apply. Later on, there are some conditions that apply if you choose, you know, to go that path. And then you have just what we call an open GTOD. I also don't like that term open because it gets confused with restricted and unrestricted, and, you know, this is a bit confusing. But a non-community TOD, and they may or may not have a formal relationship with an exclusive registrant or user population. It may or may not employ eligibility or use restrictions. So as you know, some generic top-level domains do have restrictions on who can register as a registrant. So when we say open, we are not talking about the restrictions that will later apply to the registry and the registrants. This is a very high-level way of looking at the evaluation steps. So the first thing that you see here, we have an application period. The application period you will see described on the module one of the applicant guidebook. What we mean here is that at a certain point, we will be announcing to the world that the new GTOD program application period opens on a certain date and time and closes on a certain date and time. And again, the tentative date and time right now is going to be sometime in Q1 2010. So during this application period, all of the applicants are going to answer the questions and lodge all of the documents or upload all of the documents in the system. Then what we have is that the system closes, so the application period closes. Internally at ICANN, we are going to do an administrative check. So we're going to look at all of the applications for completeness. Were all the questions answered? Did we get all of the documents that we asked? Did we receive the payment and so forth? Then we have the evaluation, the initial evaluation process that starts. In the initial evaluation process, we have different types of evaluators depending on the expertise that are going to look at the application, the applicant, the supporting documents, and do the evaluation. The details about the criteria that is going to be used is also on the applicant guidebook. So I'm not going to extend on that because there's quite a lot of material to cover. In some circumstances, an extended evaluation may apply. So the shortest path, or the application that is not objected, application that doesn't face an extended evaluation, should be quite straightforward. Apply, there's an initial evaluation with the results from the evaluators, and then transition to delegation. But some applications might also go through an extended evaluation, might go through an objection and dispute resolution, or might face a string contention. So string is another way that we use to refer to a top-level domain. And by string contention, we mean that, let's say we have two or more applicants that are applying for a top-level domain that is either identical or very similar to each other. And this specific part of the program was taking into account the user confusion. So I consider myself an internet user, so we as users would look at the string and we will find something too similar. So we're trying to avoid that, the similarity issue. So let's say that we have applicants that are facing string contention. If they face string contention, which means they are in a bucket, or so to speak, or they are in a group that has been identified as similar or identical strings, these applicants will have to face a certain path. And there are two ways that ICANN has to resolve the issue. All things equal, who should get this TOD at the end? The two different ways are, one of them is comparative evaluation that applies in very specific circumstances, and the second way to resolve that issue is with auction. And again, the applicant guidebook outlines the specifics of each of these different mechanisms to resolve the string contention issue. Then we have the transition to delegation. Transition to delegation, this is the part where the registry, or the future registry, is going to sign an agreement with ICANN. And we have what we call a base agreement that is also part of the applicant guidebook. And in this base agreement, you have an ongoing commitment. As a registrar, you have an ongoing commitment to ICANN and its community. So I encourage you to read this agreement because it's very important to understand what is the ongoing future commitment of a future registry. So in transition to delegation, we also have some technical checks because it's very important that this applicant knows and can technically manage a TOD. We already had a technical evaluation on the initial evaluation, so here is again a double check of the technical capability or the readiness, so to speak, of this future registry. And there's also some steps that apply here that add the TOD to the route. As part of the program, so we have the evaluation process and some, you know, different paths that an evaluation can take depending on what happens with this TOD. Parallel to that, we have an objection and dispute resolution process. And basically, there are four grounds for objection. The first ground is string confusion. So that's what I explain. Again, we're trying to avoid the user confusion when they look at two strings. The second, infringement of rights. So the intent of this ground for objection is really the protection of intellectual property and other pre-existing rights. The third one, which is often controversial, is the morality and public order. And the intent of this one was to safeguard the interest of governments or provide an additional safeguard for the community. And then there's the community objection, which is the protection of community interests, either geographic base, indigenous, religious organizations, so they have grounds to go back and say, wait a minute, this applicant that is applying for this TOD and is saying that they represent this community, this is not quite true. All of this, so ICANN is not in the business of managing objection and dispute resolutions. So what we did is we engaged organizations around the world that actually will be handling the objection and dispute resolutions. Again, all this information is in the applicant guidebook. Who manages, how much does it cost, how does it work? One important note is that the objection will also have a period, a beginning and an end. So when all of the applications go through, ICANN will be publishing on its website, these are the TODs that have been applied for, this is who applied, and then also we will be posting some non-confidential, non-preparatory information. And at this point, people will know whether or not they want to object. And there are very specific grounds for objection. So again, please read the applicant guidebook to understand who can object and how. Some other considerations for the applicant. So I said, in general, all of the applicants will have to meet the same requirements, pay the same fee in order to apply for TOD. But if somebody claims to have a community TOD, there's some additional criteria that is going to apply to that specific applicant. If an applicant claims to be applying for a geographical name, there's also some additional requirement for this applicant to meet. In this specific case, if somebody is applying for a geographic name, the requirement is that this applicant demonstrates the support or non-opposition of the relevant government that it claims to represent. String contention, I already mentioned, right? We have these two different methodologies or to address string contention, one of them being comparative evaluation, the other being auction. We're targeting a single base agreement. So we have the base agreement in the applicant guidebook, and all of the applicants will need to sign the same agreement. There are some specific cases in which there's an additional component to the agreement. Like, for instance, if you apply for a community base, you need to really meet your commitments to that community, and this is going to be part of this agreement. Pre-delegation, technical checks prior to registry going live. So this is what I mentioned to you, the pre-delegation part, or the delegation part in which we check again, you know, technically if this registry is ready. And following IANA processes for delegation. So what is next for ICANN and the new GTOD program? Specifically, we continue having outreach and education events. The next one we are having is in Abu Dhabi, August 4th. We also plan on having webinars. It's a cost-efficient way to do that. We plan on having that in different languages, if possible. And we would like to start that in Q3 2009. We're looking at the possibility of doing other outreach and education events in other parts of the world, but we have not, we don't have concrete information on that yet. From a publication standpoint, we're doing the summary of consultation events. So right now, we had a consultation event about some overarching issues that Doug will explain in a few minutes. We had consultation event in Sydney, New York, and London. So what we're doing is we're getting all of this community feedback that was given verbally during those events or through the feedback forms, and we're summarizing that, and we'll be going back to the community and saying this is the outcome of those events. Analysis, IRT proposal, so this is again, you know, going a little bit into what Doug is going to explain in a few minutes. This has to do with the trademark protection proposal that this IRT team has, and they have posted some documents that we, for public comments, and we're analyzing these public comments, and we'll get back to the community a summary of that. Version 3 of the applicant guidebook. Root scaling study, again, goes into the overarching issue presentation, and the final applicant guidebook. So thank you very much. If you need to find more information, you can go to the ICANN.org website, and then on the left side, there is new GTOD program. When you click on the new GTOD program, you find information about the program, all of the documents that I've mentioned in this presentation, draft applicant guidebooks, explanatory memos, summary analysis, is everything is there. We're looking at over 30 documents and links that are, you know, part of this page. So this is it for me. So now it's Doug talking about overarching issues. Thank you very much.
You want to come up? So I'm going to now present this section. First of all, good morning again, everyone. I'm waking up from that California jet lag arriving yesterday. I'm going to cover what we call overarching issues with respect to new GTLDs. It's a big word that just sort of means some of the key issues that have come up as these new GTLDs have been considered. I'm going to cover those in about a half an hour. That will leave us a half an hour before lunch to answer questions, and at that time I'll ask Carla to come back up, and we'll take any of your new GTLD related questions at that time, and then off to networking and lunch. So from an ICANN point of view, this draft guidebook, this application that Carla described, was first published last November, November of 2008. When it was published, we got about 1,000 pages of written commentary on that guidebook. And actually, you know, for our holiday vacation we did last 2008, read through all 1,000 of those pages, many of the ICANN staffers did, and tried to distill what were the key messages from that, from the public comment we received. Many issues, as you can imagine, in these 1,000 pages and this new GTLD process is complex, and there were many comments. But there were four key areas that came out as big themes from this initial feedback. So one was around trademark protection, and I've already had the opportunity today to meet a couple of trademark attorneys, so I know they'll be interested in that today, as well as, you know, people who are interested from all sides in this matter. Just the general question of malicious use on the internet. It's clear today that, you know, there are bad actors, there is malicious purpose in the internet. By adding new GTLDs, do we somehow increase that bad action, and what could we do to work against that? Questions regarding demand, and in other words, is there a demand for new TLDs, and is that demand such that it would outweigh potential new costs associated with new TLDs? And then finally, possible issues associated with security and stability. Today there's roughly 300 top-level domains between generic domains and country codes in the root zone. If that were to dramatically increase, along with other changes that are currently planned, you heard this morning Pindar talk about IPv6 adoption in the root zone, domain name security extensions, DNSSEC, IDNs. The aggregate of all those changes, all taken together, would that represent some kind of stability issue? So those are the four issues. I'm going to cover each of those four in a very abbreviated form, and then we'll go to your questions. The approach we've taken on these is to address each one individual, and each of these issues has sort of had a separate plan. Our ICANN board has been very clear that these issues have to be addressed before the process can proceed. The mental image I have in my mind is that balancing act that Pindar was showing this morning. So the, you know, concerns on both sides of these issues and trying to find an appropriate balance. We expect further extensive comment on these issues, and there's active comment going on right now. We would encourage you to have further comment. And in general, the way our processes work is once we get this comment, the comment's received, it's considered, and then it will show up as updates into the application guidebook. So let's talk about trademark protection. First of all, the policy coming from our ICANN body, the GNSO, the policy did state that strings, and strings here are new top-level names, must not infringe existing legal rights of others that are recognized. One of the Economist reports ICANN had produced also said similar things, that in general, this notion of new domain names, new top-level domain names, promotes consumer welfare, but you have to take appropriate accounting for potential costs on trademark owners when these changes are made. So in looking at new GTLDs, it's sort of important to consider the changes in the domain name space are in the context of some existing protections and protections that already are planned for the new GTLD program. So let's just briefly cover those. We have UDRP processes, and we have people here who are very familiar with that. It's a global process for arbitration of domain name disputes, and there's been about, I think, 25,000 UDRP cases processed since it was formed. That's one avenue open to trademark owners today. There's many of the new registries have voluntarily adopted sunrise processes, that is, when a registry opens, assuring the trademark owners are involved in that opening process and can access their names. And I know .Asia ran such a process, .EU as a country code ran a process like that as well. And there are some protections built in to the new GTLD process as it's currently envisioned. So for example, today, Carla mentioned that there couldn't be two applicants for the same name or highly similar names. If you think about the domain name space today, a .com name could be highly similar. You could have an English example that I ran against recently is in my hometown, there's an organization called Theater Works, and it's spelled with the American spelling of T-H-E-A-T-E-R, works, and there's another domain name exactly the same but with the British spelling, T-H-E-A-T-R-E, works. So those kinds of collisions exist in the domain name space today. In the top-level domain name space, those kinds of collisions would not be allowed to exist. So there couldn't be that kind of cyber squatting, typo squatting issue with these top-level names that there is with the second-level names. So there's these objection processes that Carla talked about as well, so that when a new name went into the root zone, before the actual delegation, someone could raise their hand and say, I'm sorry, that infringes my intellectual property. That name can't go forward. So there are a certain number of protections already built into the system. But even with those, we heard a great deal of feedback from trademark holders saying we have an additional set of concerns. That new GTLDs could lead to a much greater cost in terms of intellectual property holders assuring the rights and the names that they have. I think probably the easiest way to describe that is thinking about what they call defensive second-level registration. Trademark owners don't want to be in a situation where if there were 100 new TLDs that have to register all their trademarks defensively to sort of take up that space in all 100 of these new top-level domains. Certainly a confusion about increase in cyber squatting or consumer confusion. I think an important one is scalability of these processes. So today we have a UDRP process, which many people would say works well. WIPO, which is one of the organizations that runs UDRP, it's the World Intellectual Property Organization, says today that about 70% to 75% of all the UDRP cases that they process actually go undefended. So a claim is made, and in 70% of the time, no one responds to that claim. So, you know, there's some people who believe that these kind of processes, especially in a world where there's many new GTLDs, would have to be updated. There's a particular concern in the intellectual property community that they see that certain registrar operators, those who resell domain names, in their view have in some cases been bad actors, have harbored bad activity. they would want to be sure that in the case that there was a new registry, a new top-level domain name, that there'd be ways, if that registry was misbehaving, to address that issue. So obviously this is a very summarized view of the intellectual property concerns, but I think this captures the primary concerns that have been raised. So from what did ICANN do with this? I think one of the real advantages of this ICANN model is that when people don't like something, or when they complain, we can sort of say, okay, you're the ones we'd like to help out, come up with the solution to this problem. So that there's many intellectual property experts who participate actively in the ICANN process. We put together a team of, I think it was 16, if that's not exactly right, it's approximately right, 16 intellectual property attorneys from, you know, all corners of the world. I'm trying to think of who I know who was there from Asia. We had Mary Wong from Singapore, I know for sure. I can't think of any others right now, but really from all over the globe, get together and put together a set of recommendations that they sort of independently did. There's a 70-page report that they developed, and it was delivered both as a preliminary and final, and that's published and has gone through a public comment process. So again, like you're hearing constantly today, you'll see that on the ICANN website. That doesn't mean that this general issue of intellectual property concerns is closed, so that, again, we'd welcome additional feedback from you on this topic. So first step in the solution was to form this group, which was had to have an acronym because it's part of ICANN, so we called it Intellectual Implementation Recommendation Team, or IRT. They came up with a series of proposals, and I'm going to summarize that 70-page report very briefly here, but hopefully catch the highlights of their recommendations. First, their first recommendation is that there should be a simple and centralized and low-cost way for intellectual property holders to share that information with a new registry. So, for example, in these sunrise processes, every registry might have a different way of getting information in from intellectual property holders about what the trademarks are, what they view their rights to be. The idea is that in this suggestion would be that there'd be a central IP clearinghouse that all new registries could tap into, a central database where this information would be available. They've also recommended that there should be a standard level of intellectual property protection for any new registry. And in the recommendations that were provided, this is called either an IP claim service or sort of a standardized sunrise process. Again, the notion is that with a central database of intellectual property information, that there'd be a minimum of intellectual property protection that each new registry would provide. The third one is that there would be to supplement, not replace the UDRP, but to supplement the UDRP, there'd be a new process, which is called URS. I'm hoping somebody out there can help me with this acronym. Carla, can you help me with URS? Uniform Rapid Suspension. Thank you very much. And I sat through probably 20 hours of IRT meetings. I'm sorry about that. Uniform Rapid Suspension. And the idea behind URS is different than UDRP. For people who follow this closely, in UDRP, the winner is given the domain name. Two parties dispute. At the end of that dispute, the winning party actually gets the domain name or keeps the domain name. In this URS process, in the IRT report, it recommended that there are cases that are pretty blatant of intellectual property infringement. And in those most blatant cases, particularly where there's no respondent, and WIPO says today 70 to 75% of the cases have no respondent, in those cases, there'd be a way to suspend domain names, not change their registration, but suspend the operation of domain names. The fourth recommendation is that there be a list of globally protected marks. You'll see, if you read this report, you'll see that there has not yet been a specific definition of what the requirements would be to become a globally protected mark. Nor has there been a specific definition of how many of these globally protected marks there will be. Obviously, the challenge is if there were 300 globally protected marks, certainly the entity that was 301st on that list would want the criteria to be expanded to cover even more entities. But the idea here is that there would be a set of criteria, maybe registration in, you know, five different parts of the globe, or, you know, a whole variety of criteria that would qualify a registered mark to be in a globally protected category. And in that category, it would have a special standing with respect to both new TLDs and registrations at the second level. The fifth recommendation is that all registries should offer what's called thick who is. And basically that means that each registry would maintain a who is database of their registrants, obviously still subject to whatever the local laws of the land are in which that registry operates. Many registries today already do that, but they were calling for standardization on that practice. Sixth, that there be a robust mechanism for sanctions once a new TLD has gone into operation. So the basic idea is that if a TLD were really misbehaving or really engaging, was a center for bad activity on the internet, that there should be a way to provide a sanction or, in some cases, remove the delegation back from that registry operator. I probably should point out that on those last two recommendations, recommendation 5 and 6, in the current applicant guidebook process, in the current GTLD process as envisioned by ICANN, elements of that are already called for. That is, there is a thick who is, this central registry of who is information already called for, and there is a post-delegation dispute mechanism, although it's different from the one proposed by the IRT. And then the last point that they made is, I mentioned early on that if two strings are the same or very similar, that they wouldn't be allowed in the new GTLD process. The intellectual the IRT team recommended that beyond just visual similarity, other characteristics of those strings be considered, for example, how they sound. So that's a set of summarized recommendations from this IRT group and also others who have been involved in this intellectual property discussion at ICANN. Sort of what the way forward is right now, we're in this process of receiving comments right now. ICANN is receiving comments right now. We've been actively out in the last couple of weeks. I've been in London, New York, taking in all these comments, and we're continuing to get lots of written comments. The tangible outcome of that will be changes to the draft applicant guidebook, this version 3 guidebook that Carla talked about, targeted for the September timeframe. And again, a couple of people have already pulled me aside and said this is a particular interest area for them. We will have a question segment, so I'll be happy to try to answer your questions. And then I would also say it's still an opportunity to participate to give us your written comments. So let's touch on malicious conduct and the other issues as well. What were the issues? What were the questions? Well, basically the question is, will new GTLDs, will the addition of new top-level domains result in an expansion of opportunities for bad behavior on the internet? If so, what are the kind of, what kinds of problems might be amplified in the case of adding new generic top-level domains? And then how could those be mitigated? The approach to this, this issue is different than the approach on the intellectual property area, because ICANN really wanted to bring in a bunch of external groups who are very interested in malicious use. I'm not sure you'll be familiar with all these groups, but certainly in the United States, APWG, Anti-Phishing Working Group, is really one of the premier organizations that track phishing and malicious activity on the internet. We had a financial services industry roundtable participate, and you can read the others, including Registry Internet Safety Group, which is a coalition of registries who have a particular interest in security, and worked with them both to articulate in more detail what the problem is of malicious conduct, and really are now actively working with them on what some of the solutions might be. So, not surprisingly, this issue, when you talk about things like cyber squatting or phishing or any of these kind of concerns, there's some overlap between trademark protections and the view of the trademark people and this malicious conduct idea. Basically, the malicious conduct element of this work is focused on criminal activity, not the trademark side. The way I like to think about it is that if a problem is happening where people's credit cards are being stolen right now, that's malicious conduct. These are things that happen not in hours or weeks or months, but things that happen in minutes. So we really see this malicious conduct, although it's highly related to some of the trademark concerns, is a very different matter, and it's related to really criminal activity. We've tried to categorize some of the concerns. One concern being new top-level domains that might have an implication to the consumer or to the internet user of being more highly secure. So the example, the very common example that's used here is if you had a .bank new top-level domain, consumers might have an expectation that .bank is a highly secure place where they can expect to do business. What would be the security implications for that? Or if there was a .finance, or you know, if there was an Asian banking group that wanted to do that same kind of thing, what would the security requirements of that be? A second is that you know, by this, the group of folks that are concerned about malicious use, to ensure that registry practices are such that they would accommodate you know, what are sort of considered best technical practices for running a registry. Some examples here, probably won't go into the details of, but wildcarding and other technical matters. And then this group has also come back and said there should be a way to ensure response to malicious conduct so that we can find the people who are performing the conduct, and that that registrars would have a higher level requirement to maintain easy point of contact information so you can report a problem. I was talking to one large e-commerce company that's a common target for phishing threats. And the number one thing they say they have done to improve their response to phishing is to have systematized processes for handling phishing complaints as they come in. Sounds like a very simple thing, but today in the registrar world, it tends to be people who are friends with each other. There's only about 21 registries. There's not thousands and thousands of registrars. People know who to call when problems occur. So in this area of malicious use, one of the areas of biggest focus is to ensure that there be reasonable processes to address problems, not just personal relationships. So in terms of going forward, there's two threads of activity going on right now, working with a variety of people in the banking and finance community to sort of ask this question about should there be a set of requirements for zones that would imply a greater level of security, and then working with those outside parties, as I mentioned, APWG and others, to have appropriate mitigation processes, appropriate you know, solutions to addressing malicious behavior. Root zone scaling. This is a technical topic that I'm going to cover briefly, but it may be of interest. As I mentioned, there's about 300 TLDs in the root zone today. The root zone file, it sort of sounds like something that might be mysterious and highly technical, but it's actually something you could print out, and it wouldn't be a long printout, and you could read all the elements of it. And it just basically says, you know, this top-level domain is found at this address. You know, there's more information than that, but it's really a pretty simple thing. There's been a bunch of change and plan change to the root zone file. So, for example, IPv6 has just recently, within the last, I think, 18 months, been implemented in the root zone file. IDNs in a test mode exist at the top level today, and we expect this to launch relatively soon. New gTLD process would add numbers of new TLDs, and as many of you may have seen, ICANN is working with the Department of Commerce in the U.S. and VeriSign to sign the root zone file, you know, as early as the end of this year or early next year. So there's a number of changes all happening at the same time, and smart engineers say we should really take a look at those changes and make sure that when viewed in total, that there's not going to be, it's not going to be, you know, some negative impact on the way the internet works. ICANN has two technical bodies that, if you looked at that org chart that I showed early this morning, two of these technical bodies participate in ICANN. One is called the Root Server System Advisory Committee, needs another acronym, RSSAC or RSAC, and the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, SSAC. Those two groups are working together to do this study, and they're taking a model-based approach to analyzing changes in the root zone. What I mean by that is that they've taken this picture of root zone operations. On the left-hand side, requests for changes coming in from TLD operators, then being processed through the IANA function at ICANN, Department of Commerce, and VeriSign, through the publication of those changes out from the root server operators, and then ultimately out to ISPs and others who run domain name system resolvers. So the approach on this study is actually to create a computer model of this entire system. And although it hasn't been finalized, I think our intent is at this point to make that computer model public, so that in addition just to publishing results of this study, to make the model itself public so people who have an interest could interact with that model, people of a technical bent, to examine the accuracy of that model. So the way forward on this is that we expect a draft report and model from this technical group in August, September, and that will be published. And if there's any impact of that recommendations on the new GTLD process, that those will be incorporated. Fourth and finally, briefly on this notion of economic studies in the domain name market. Really the questions, going back and reading these questions now from almost a year ago, different people mean different things when they talk about what are the demand for new TLDs. At some level, a number of organizations have registered strong interest in operating a new TLD. So I don't think there's a lot of question at this point, is there a demand for people who want to start new TLDs? When I was in Sydney, Australia a few weeks ago, Wolfgang Puck, who's a famous chef in North America, said that he wants a .food TLD. Many city names in the world today, Berlin has been a city, Berlin in Germany wanting a TLD, New York City, a U.S. politician, Al Gore, had said he wants to support a .eco, an ecology-oriented TLD. So I think there's little question that there's an interest in new TLDs. These economic questions that people ask tend to be more centered on what will the benefits to end users be? What will the additional costs be? ICANN has published a series of reports on this topic. I won't go through all those, of the listing there that's shown on the slide. I will say that with all these reports, it still hasn't stopped this discussion within the ICANN community. So that on the one hand, there's been a great deal of economic study published. There's still always a request for more. I think that from an ICANN point of view right now, the next important step is in all cases going forward on a new TLD process, it's going to be to ensure that whatever the negative or cost elements of new TLD are minimized. And again, I think going back to our keynote this morning, the idea is that with this creation of new TLDs, there is an opportunity to improve some of our practices in terms of putting in appropriate safeguards that balance the concerns of all around trademark protection, around malicious use, and just to ensure that the creation of new GTLDs is not strictly going to have a negative impact on a lot of people. I think in terms of specific economic studies and what's needed there, that conversation goes on within the ICANN community. I think that on the one hand, as someone with a background from Silicon Valley and 25 years in the technology industry, no economic study in the end is going to answer the question of how do you innovate. That innovation is going to happen because people have ideas and they try out those ideas. And in fact, one way of looking at this that many have asked as well, in addition to this demand, is why should there only be 22 top-level domains in a world with now onto 2 billion internet users? So it's a complex area that studies in the end may not fully address, but ICANN staff and board is continuing that dialogue with the community around are more economic studies available. And then again, sort of in concert with the keynote presentation for this morning, I think we as a broad internet community, those who participate actively in ICANN and those of you who this may be your first time, is to consider what do we think metrics of success for the internet and internet use are, and start to measure and monitor those so that as we go forward, in sort of an adaptive way, if there are problems, we can identify those early and fix them. So just quick summary, just a couple slides left before questions. Everybody's been very patient, sitting in their chairs today. In terms of the next steps on these overarching issues for trademark protection, it's basically to complete the current round of consultations, take into account the written comments and reflect those in the draft applicant guidebook after appropriate balancing. Root zone scaling, we're waiting for a study, and we're reviewing the work on the market and demand. Just graphically what that looks like is this work really began about 6 months ago now, and has been going on. There's a wiki. I'll ask Carla when she comes back up what the URL for the wiki is. But there's in addition to the ICANN website, there's a special site, a special wiki, where you can contribute directly to on all of these four overarching issues. And the next major milestone for these in terms of resolving those will be new information showing up in the applicant guidebook. And we fully expect that when we publish that version 3 applicant guidebook, there'll be another round of questions and comment, and that's the way ICANN works, taking in that public comment. So I think that brings me to the end of the presentation. I'm going to ask Carla to come back up. And at this point, until 12:30, I think we have plenty of time, really. We can take questions and try to respond to those.
Please come up to the mic stand if you have any questions.
Good morning, everyone. First, thanks a lot to Mr. Valentin and Mr. Brandt for the great overview about the new GTLD program and overarching issues. My name is Lin Wang, coming from the China Organizational Name Administration Center, abbreviation as CONAC. First, I would like to represent Professor Hong Xue, who is the director of the Institute for the Internet Policy and Law in Beijing Normal University. She is the chair of Council Chinese Domain Name User Alliance. Because her schedule is conflict with today's meeting, so she would like me to represent her to share a statement against the IRT report from the perspective of AP, a large community. This more related to the IRT about the trademark protection. So I'd like to read her statement to share with everybody.
I'm not at all trying to be rude, and we definitely want to hear that statement, but also just balancing with the number of people here. I see you have many pages there. How long is the statement?
Okay. The main idea about her statement is that since at the very beginning of the new GTLD application, about .com and .biz, they have the similar meaning, but they are not against for putting the root zone. For this time, for the new GTLD in the guidebook, it said if the meaning and the visual similarity would be objected in this application. So this seems not very right. Because legal protection of a trademark in translation or transliteration must be subject to the complicated legal analysis and the judgment based on special law in the respective territoria. ICANN has neither the authority nor capacity to do this in the initial evaluation process. If taking into account those famous marks that consist of generic terms, the IRT proposal would seem absurd. Why should a trademark such as Boss, Dove, or Vogue bar the Chinese character TLDs like Da Laoban, Da Gezi, or Da Shishang? In contrast to the trademarks that have been singled out as an overarching issue for new GTLD implementation, we concern that the other legal issues that are protected by the international treaties, such as non-trademark traditional knowledge, would be unreasonably ignored or pushed aside. This is her opinion. Maybe I just abbreviate. I have a hard copies about this statement, so if other people are interested, please come over to get it.
And could I also request that if you send that to us, we'll ensure that it's posted as part of the record of this meeting as well.
Okay, I will let her know and she can directly email you. And also, regarding the who is the thick specification, I just wondered if ICANN could respect the privacy of the registrant and also guard the stability of the registrant. So just get their opinion if they want to publish their information on the Whois system, Whois information. So just do a mutual way, not a very strict way to show their privacy data. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll just say thank you very much for your comments, and I think as I was talking about these intellectual property issues, I was definitely presenting it from the point of view of the trademark holders who have made these comments, and there's other views, and you're certainly representing one of those views, and so that's helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, and if I may add, Doug, we had a session in New York, and we also had a session in London, and I believe in both sessions some people have raised concerns or have raised the fact that they didn't believe the IRT have addressed some of the IDN issues. So, and they gave this feedback in writing for us as well.
Hi, I'm Chihu Chang. I was involved in the last round of GTLD applications. I was involved in the .asia application. And I must say, my experience of the last round was not quite good. But now I see for this round, the application fee is US dollars,
yes.
$185,000. That's a lot. I think it's about four times of the last round. Okay, I don't go into whether it's justified or not, but I would like to ask whether there is SLA for the applications, because last time when we did it, basically our emails were not answered, it's not responsive at all, even for voicemail, no return calls, that kind of thing. I would like to know whether there's SLA for the applications.
I think that's really an interesting point. I haven't heard anyone specifically say an SLA. Certainly ICANN's goal is to run this professionally and do it well and be responsive to applicants and make it a predictable process. I think if you have ideas about specific aspects of that process that should have some guaranteed response time, we'd be open to hearing that.
At least I think you have to answer emails, you have to answer phone calls. That's the basic requirements.
That seems like pretty basic, and right, I would agree. We should do that.
Okay. My second question is regarding IPv6. I'm not sure. I haven't read the documents. Is there any requirement that you put in to mandate that the new GTLD registries will support IPv6?
So I'm doing this from memory. Definitely there is, in the technical requirements for the new GTLDs, it talks about not only IPv6 addressability, but IPv6 reachability for new registries as being not necessarily a requirement in the very first round, but something that you would get sort of extra credit for in terms of the evaluation, and that there's a couple things that very likely will show up in the second draft guidebook as saying, and in the future we expect these to be mandatory. One would be potentially DNSSEC, and one would be IPv6 reachability.
To me, I think you must put IPv6 as mandatory requirements. Otherwise, it will delay the IPv6 deployment.
Point well taken. I'm just trying to answer what's in there right now. Thank you. Thank you.
My name's Adrian Kinderis. I'm from Oz Registry International. We're a registry back-end services provider, and we will be submitting applications with applicants providing the technical piece. I appreciate the opportunity to address staff here today. I raised this topic with the ICANN board during the meeting in Sydney, and it is the topic of the timelines, but with a twist, Doug.
Okay.
And the twist is, I don't particularly, I'm not going to stand here and say, we've seen this timeline slip and slip and slip, and I certainly, as being part of the process and being on a GNSO council, certainly understand why we've seen the timeline slip. However, in supporting applicants and going through this process, we, like many organisations, are spending a lot of money burning cash, waiting for this timeline. So my question, or at least the theme of what I'm trying to talk about today, is not about trying to rush you. I'm not saying let's do it, but to pick a time and to stick to it. And whether that time is in 3 years from now or whether that time is in 3 months from now, we would, as a business owner and manager, I would appreciate that clarity. Because what I'll do is, if it's going to be in 3 years, I'll sack all my staff. And this is what I said at the board meeting is, you know, I'll go play golf and I'll stop burning $100,000 a month in cash waiting for the process to start. So I implore the staff to at least take back to the board and in your workings to consider the timeline, and I know you do, but I'm being, you know, as explicit as I can, and that allowing it just to slip and to drip doesn't help us that are trying to be as part of this process and support those that are going to be applicants at the end. So I guess it's not a question as much as it is a statement today. Thank you.
Thanks, Adrian.
Hi, Doug and Carla. This is Xin Chiao, working for Data Asia, but speaking on my own behalf. Just like to echo what Chiho and also Andrew just said, that the last round, the cost is, I shouldn't say reasonable, but it's much lower than this round. So I'm assuming that the SLA this time can be kept in the higher level. Perhaps the 185K can, I can hire like two or three sort of the managers to manage the whole process. So when we, for example, if the if an applicant can talk to their, for example, like investors, say there will be specific timeline for the process, and you can feel more comfortable putting down your money and go through the process. And that's one. So just like to say, just to echo that, and also like to bring back the issues on two other things. One is the limitation on the ID, and I'm assuming that this topic will be touched and probably at the later part of the
yes.
Okay. So, and my last comment will be on the IRT. I think we will have more chances to talk over on that, particularly the IRT to protect the trademarks in Chinese, Japanese, and also Korean for these three overlapping words, and also the languages will be used that by the three communities that we just talked about. I'm assuming that the IRT is addressing this issue, but my observation last time in the Sydney meetings that I go to the mic and the queue, but it seems that at that time the IRT is not ready especially the GPML. The issue, and also how do they actually try to structure the IP clearinghouse? Would that be a centralized ones, or people in this region, the business in this region, will have a sort of a regional support? So the Chinese, Japanese, Korean brands can be protect more effectively. That's my point.
Could I make a couple quick comments back, which is. On just being able to run this new GTLD process professionally, certainly that's ICANN's goal. So until we do it, we haven't proven that, but that is, we certainly take that seriously and understand that that's an important part.
Sure.
With respect to sort of non-Western issues with respect to these trademark concerns, I think it would be really helpful. When I was in London, we got some comments from an Arabic speaker who had similar kind of comments.
Right.
And I think it would be really useful to get a written submission from you or email or whatever would work on where you think the gaps are between the proposals that are made or what the thinking is from a you know, Chinese speaker's point of view or Chinese business point of view, where those recommendations don't cover those.
So one quick reply is that I actually talked to the registry operator and also the registrar manage the corporate brands here. So we love to have the opportunity to work on that.
That's great. And so I just to really reinforce for everyone, and when we get these written submissions at ICANN, there's two real values to that, one of which is they become public. So everyone gets to see them. So that, for example, for people who are completely opposed to these intellectual property protections at all, those comments are posted and it becomes part of the public discussion. Secondly, ICANN staff read every single one of these submissions And, you know, we're doing our best for the balancing act. So that would be really useful to get that.
Just one quick last one last sentence. Because the IRT, the process is very, definitely in this region, we need more time to respond, to read through the whole document. We just need more time on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Tony Kirsch from Oz Registry International. Two comments. One, very quickly about the timelines. That was my boss that was making joke about sacking people if you're going to take 3 years. So if you could maybe go a little bit quicker than that, it might save my job. But more, my comment was more about transition to delegation. And a lot of the work that we've been focusing on so far has been getting the names, going through the processes and covering off the constituencies' requirements and so on. And the technical requirements from the DAG itself, EPP, failover monitoring, IPv6 transition you've referred to already this morning, this afternoon, it's a complicated thing. And I think one of the concerns that we're having with some of the people that we're talking to is that they have the feeling that it's $185,000 to get their own TLD, and then it becomes a making money exercise. And we, like you, no doubt feel that that's a very small component of the overall scheme. So I guess my question specifically is, how is ICANN going to enforce the requirements of the DAG, in particular the technical ones, because we get the feeling that a lot of it is a self-certification, and we would like to recommend or at least suggest a more stringent approach given the long-term implications for having a TLD for registrants, you know, over the course of time.
I mean, I'll take this, Carl. I don't know if you have any more comments, but generally, if you have suggestions about what we should be doing from a certification point of view, I think we're wide open to hearing that. And as Carla said in her discussion, we in complete agreement with you that the ICANN fee is really what people should be thinking about is they're going to run a business, which is it's not registering a domain name, it's running a business. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. And if you have specific suggestions on what ICANN should be doing for technical certification, wide open hearing.
Yeah, we'd be more than happy to put that forward. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hello, my name is Alex Lee. I'm the CEO of China Springboard, a China-based registrar, ICANN accredited. First, let me thank ICANN for making the trip out here to Hong Kong, and also thank Charles Mock and the Internet Society of Hong Kong for hosting this event. I can also sympathize with your California jet lag. I've done that trip many times before. It's not fun. If you can make it through 6 o'clock, I'd be surprised.
Okay, thanks.
The question I have is in relation to intellectual property and the new GTLD process. In Sydney, it was stated that there would be I think the quote was, geographically distinct operating body set up for the new GTLD process. And ICANN, over the past several years, has been working very diligently to internationalize the entire organization and to bring more voices into it. So in the new GTLD process, and as it relates to a geographically distinct entity or organizing body, I'd like to know what specifically over the past several months and going into the next several months before the actual applications are taken is ICANN doing to internationalize this entire process? And I think that is very relevant to the question of intellectual property, ICT, URS, and all of the issues associated with that. So I understand that there's a wiki and that we can submit responses and comments and things of that nature. But what we in the community expect ICANN to do is to be a proactive organization and to think about some of these issues, these international issues, linguistic, cultural, historical, what have you, without having to just respond to the community. And so what is the kind of organizing body around the new GTLD process? We are by nature humans, human-centric or self-centric. So whatever body is organizing or managing this process is going to be thinking about it from their point of view. So I'm wondering what specific steps ICANN is taking to make that a more international process and body specifically.
Alex, I'm not sure I think I completely understand the thrust of your comment, but when you talk about a separate organizing body, I'm not sure what you're... Could you say a few more words about that? I'm not sure.
Maybe I'm confusing kind of what the quote that I read, but a geographically distinct, location,
I think.
is what was mentioned in Sydney.
Right.
So where are we on that? Where is it going to be? Is it going to be in Asia? Is it going to be in Europe? Is it going to be in Marina del Rey?
Right.
I think it comes back to one of the previous questions, which is timelines, you know.
So I think I can answer the question now. I think I understand it. So I did make that comment, and I'm sort of surprised. But I think the basic idea is that from an operational perspective, in part to address the concerns various people raised about that it be run professionally, that ICANN really wants that the group that's processing, that's responsible for sort of the operational processing of new GTLD applications to be separate from the rest of its offices. Frankly, in part for security reasons, you don't want the policy work of ICANN mixing with this just very operational piece. I sure don't want to know any of the names that are being applied for new right. GTLDs until, you know, it's completely public. Right. So really, I think the notion of separate is really more physically separate, not a separation for globalization.
I understand.
But then you ask the question, what are we doing about globalization of the process? So first of all, with respect to internationalized domain names, one of the things we've really been working on is how do we get appropriate linguistic expertise involved in that?
Exactly.
Because, even if we put it in, you know, Hong Kong or Beijing, there still wouldn't be, you know, that wouldn't address the needs of, you know, somebody in Saudi Arabia. Well, it could, but unlikely that it would address the needs of somebody in Saudi Arabia. So I think that, ICANN's been working actively with UNESCO, with another UN organization called UNGEGN. It's a geographic names organization to try to ensure that we have access to appropriate linguistic expertise. In terms of new GTLD processing, we're right now in the process over the last few months have been taking applications for entities that will be, most of the work will be outsourced. Because ICANN's not going to hire 100 people we're really going to be running a process. And we've been giving strong preference to organizations that can operate in multiple parts of the world, physical locations in multiple parts of the world, so that as applications are processed, they're not all being processed in, you know, Marina Del Rey okay. or Brussels. They're being processed okay. around the world. And I've seen some of these. It would be premature in this meeting to say, you know, who might be selected to do that work. But I've seen several of the bids, and they're quite good and quite good in terms of geographic spread.
Thank you very much. That's very informative. My last comment would just to be continue with that good work, and to stay on top of that. We are, you know, coming close to the close of third quarter here, going into fourth quarter. So if we're still organizing the bodies that are going to be managing this process, that puts us on a pretty tight timeline.
It is. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, Doug and Carla. And my name is Richard, and I'm from the NetMission Ambassador Program, organized by .Asia. And I'm very interested about the new GTLD program, but there are some questions I would like to ask about the application fee, because I see that the high fee is reasonable to make the program be more to ensure the credibility. But can it be more flexible? Because, for example, .care, .charity, and .ngo, those kind of organizations, they cannot afford those amounts. And even though the board of directors would not allow them to pay a lot for their internet platform. So can it be more flexible? And actually, I'm a university student, and there are tons of student unions and organizations. And if we want to ask for a GTLD called .studentorganization or something like that, we cannot have money for those debt. And even the university cannot grant us those amount of money because there are really millions of organizations. So can the flexibility be more enhanced? And in case that even though the GTLD program can be more down to earth, what I mean is.
Richard, I think that's an extremely good comment. And if you've followed ICANN, there's been many, many similar comments. I think that the short response to that would be that right now, sort of by policy mandate, ICANN is required to equate costs and the incoming fees. But I think more important, we view this round of new generic top-level domains that's opening up as to be round one of many potentially to come. And so that in the first round, it may be that being relatively conservative on these costs, it may preclude a .student union kind of an opportunity. But maybe in the second round or third round as there's more certainty built into this process. Maybe there's other source of funds. Maybe the fees go down, which would generally the direction of ICANN fees over the last years has been to reduce fees. So that there might be an opportunity, maybe that opportunity wouldn't exist as easily in the first round, but might be subsequent rounds.
So you mean the coming future, the possibility
yeah,
is there?
I think that's absolutely right.
Okay, thank you though, thank for you. The good news. Okay.
Hi, this is Edmund Chung from Internet Society Hong Kong. I'm actually facilitating some questions from the online chat room. So there are five questions. I hope the line's not too long. Okay. The first question, and for those online, if I'm paraphrasing your question, you know, yell at me online. Sorry about that. The first question's from Augusto. It's sort of a twist on the economic analysis, I would say. He wanted to ask whether, you know, ICANN's going to pay any attention to the millions of dollars people have spent on investing in the value of, like, existing GTLD domains. Like, for example, he put out, like, cars.com when there's something .cars, what that economic impact will be to those who are investing a lot of money right now into the existing domain names.
You know, I think it's sort of hard to comment on. If you consider the high level value of this new generic top level domain program to be sort of opening up competition and choice, the bad side of competition sometimes is that it's competitive. It can create new competition for people. The goal of that obviously is that for internet users and people who do things on the internet that there's more value created. So I mean, I'm very sympathetic to that comment, but I think it's just in the nature of the program.
The second question from Elaine, she's asking, in terms of the confusingly similar TLDs, things like a male-female sort of variant of a name, quoting .latina versus .latino, would that be considered similar, or, you know, would that be... Can two different entities run that, or for example, .cologne and .cologne, which is .kolne versus .cologne? How ICANN would look at those type of situations?
You want to take that one, Carla?
No, I don't.
Are you a Latina or a Latino?
Yeah, I'm a Latina.
Latina, I think.
So we have in the process two ways that we're looking at string similarity. One is there's an algorithm that looks at the applications and groups the applications based on similarity and identical. And then we also have a group of experts that is going to determine whether or not something is considered to be similar going forward. So these are the two steps on the process. Now, right now, just looking at Latina and Latino is not something that I can answer.
Okay, well, the third question is from Danny. Keeps jumping around, but essentially what he's asking is that we're right now within this IRT discussion, and we're enveloped with this discussion because he feels that it's because of a breakdown of the GNSO policy not being able to bring those comments at an earlier stage. The crux of the question was, how could you then conclude that other parts of the GNSO policy does not have the same situation, and a lot of the comments are not surfacing just because people haven't had the time and energy to spend yet on the issue, and you know, how do you safeguard against those kind of situation?
I mean, you know. For people who don't know, Edmund is a policy counselor at ICANN, so he knows these issues quite well, and hard to know how deeply to go in answering that question. I think the development of this policy by community volunteers was a very difficult process. I think people did their absolute best to come up with a policy. It's been the staff job to implement that as well as we could to that policy. I think at this point... yes, there's always a possibility new issues will come up that haven't been considered, but given the breadth of comments and, you know, now getting this ever more global, it seems unlikely we're going to find some brand new area that has not been explored at all. So I think it's a, there's an inter, the commenter makes a very interesting point, but my personal opinion is it's unlikely there's some completely unthought of area with respect to new TLDs.
And I think there were discussions within the GNSO about trademarks. There was a report by the IPC. But if you look at the process, once you start designing a process, once you start designing the criteria, I think you see other issues surfacing. Then you see some application. You look at the policy here and you see how it's being translated into the process. And it's not that things were maybe not taken into account in the past, but, you know, when something is translated into a process, it creates a different layer of complexity and a different layer of issues. And I think this is what we're seeing in the comments in relation to trademark protection, in relation to geographic names, in relation to community-based applications, string contention, and so forth.
Okay. Fourth question from Alex. The question is about whether ICANN will put in any control over the market pricing when the new GTLDs are introduced. Market pricing as in the second level registrations.
Our current economic studies, we've actually, as you may know, Evan, there's been a study of that. The recommendation is not to put price caps on those new TLDs. That's still a matter of discussion, but the recommendation is not. Part of the new GTLD process, though, also calls for very long-running registrations. From memory, I think it calls for 10-year registrations. I'm looking to Adrian. He might know, as part of the application process, so that one of the consumer and registrant protections would be the ability to get very long-term registrations. Edmund, thank you very much for speaking on behalf of the people at chat.
All right. So one last one is about the vertical integration issue and the registry-registrar separation, and what process would ICANN take in terms of making that determination?
Right. That's an issue we haven't discussed here today, but for people who closely follow these ICANN topics, it's another real major debate, which is ICANN has a certain model for registries and registrars today. To a certain extent, that model will break down with the addition of new registries and back-end registry service providers. So how will that model be adjusted to deal with this new world? It's a very active discussion at this point. I can't remember that, you know, certainly there'll be an update in the draft applicant guidebook, but I think there's been some promise of even a further public meeting on that topic. I'm sorry to be a little fuzzy on that one. I'm not absolutely sure.
So there hasn't quite been
it's good to have all these issues right on the top of your head, but I'm not absolutely certain what the answer is on that one.
If I could please interject, Adrian, to be the last person,
right.
We have a lunch break and we also have, you know, to continue with the program.
Those are the ones from the online forum. And anybody here, if you are shy to come to the mic, also can log online and post your questions.
It happens frequently. Any sense of how many people are logged on online? I'm looking back to our tech people.
35
people logged online now. Thank you. Please.
Well, hello, Mr. Brent. I'm Johnny and also from the NetMission Ambassadors as WeChat. And I'm also a frequent internet user as well. I would like to ask about something. For the generic top-level domains, like some words like .care, care means both things. One is the commercial healthcare issue, and the second is also the humanity care. And how can the .care can be divided into different benefit groups, like a humanity care NGO can be charged for less price, or for those commercial healthcare for a higher price. But in fact, if the one who proposed the dot care is those of the commercial organizations, is there any way for the ICANN to regulate this so that the non-governmental organization could use dot care for cheaper prices? Because there are many dot something that is for one or more meaning, and I want to address that. Is some of the commercial bodies occupy those meaning and they charge those of the non-governmental organizations for higher fee, and I think it's not that fair to those who want to use that as well. Is there any solution for you to address this problem?
I think in relation to the cost issue, we sort of talked about that before, and it may not have been an adequate answer for you, but you know, I think that your issue on the cost is I think we've talked about that, and it's a point well taken. In terms of in the current process, though, certainly an NGO, non-government organization, or any kind of community organization could object to a commercial entity registering a name, and that actually one of the primary reasons that there is that community designation that Carla mm-hmm. talked about mm-hmm. is specifically to address that part of the concern. Doesn't address the cost side of what you've said, but it does address the notion of a commercial entity or a non-commercial entity being able to object to a commercial entity taking a name.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Two rather short questions about protecting intellectual property rights. Why did ICANN decide to step in actively to resolve disputes about copyright infringements in domain names rather than taking the sort of Google approach of letting anyone register any name and then let the registrants sue each other?
I think that that's a good question, and let me see if I can try to answer it. I think that part of the reason is that, and I'm not an attorney. Many people who participate in ICANN are, some people start from the point of view that in most jurisdictions, trademark holders have a duty to go protect their trademarks. So some people think that that's all that would be necessary. I think from an ICANN point of view, given that we're now entering a process where the English phrase is there's beachfront real estate. You know, there's certain houses that have beach. We're essentially expanding the amount of beach. We're expanding the amount of real estate and territory for people to register names. If we did that in such a way that we're just sort of generating new cost for a bunch of companies without a benefit, it's hard to decide to do that without considering what the costs and what the issues are for people who will be participating in this new system. And I think those people raised their hand and said, this is a major concern to us, and that's why we've taken in this set of recommendations. But that has to be balanced against the kind of concerns you raise.
Okay.
So if I understand correctly also, are you questioning why we have a dispute resolution mechanism at all during
pardon?
The process? Are you questioning whether we have a dispute mechanism during the process at all
instead of just...
So one of the considerations, so besides having to work from a policy framework, you know, that had taken this into account, you have to look at the fact that once TODs are allocated, if you have a post-delegation dispute, if you have post-delegation issues, there's more impact than only to the two or more parties involved. You have registrants, you have, you know, the whole infrastructure. You know, so having a dispute resolution during the process, and I'm not going to be speaking on behalf of the GNSO, but some of the things that I believe were taken into account was to avoid that, you know, in the post-delegation. So there's an opportunity during the application process for people that believe they have their rights infringed upon, you know, to object and take care of things before having things escalating, you know, at the post-delegation level, when then you have registrants, you have a lot of investment, you have a lot of other layers of issues to take into account.
And second question is, with so many new GTLDs coming up, what, in your opinion, do you think is the future of the future equivalent of defensive second-level domain registration?
Right. So that's you've asked a big, broad question. We're 3 minutes into lunch, but let me try
Thanks
to
for
just,
answering.
Give a very brief answer to the question. I think that one view is that in this new GTLD world, and again, actually going back to the keynote from this morning, if people get away from typing names and more finding things via search, top-level domains at that point could be more an indicator of have I reached the right location or not when I see my search results. It could be that we're going towards a world in the future where typo-squatting or defensive second-level registrations are less important than they are today. So, for example, when we were in Australia, I don't think this woman was speaking on behalf of the entire IBM corporation, but somebody from IBM in Australia said, if I had a .IBM, I might be able to much better manage my brand identity online in a central place rather than going to second-level registrations all over the world to do that. So I'm not offering that as a prediction, but I think that that's one view.
Thank you.
And if I may add
Carla, why don't we, can we just go on to the next question? We're getting ready to lunch. Adrian?
Hungry.
Adrian Kinnerson, I do realize we're into lunch, so I'll be as quick as I can, but I do like a microphone. Two responses, actually, to two topics that have been discussed. The first one was one question that Edmund brought up from online, which is about ICANN setting prices at the second level. I think what folks need to understand is we're going to see a whole new ball game, if you like, at the second level, whereby IBM may indeed be running their own namespace for themselves and not charge any fee. So I think that mindset needs to change in people, that it's not going to be a $6 second-level domain name registration. It might be $1,000 for one domain if someone wants to offer a premium. So I just think that that's an important point that people need to consider, is that the ballgame's going to change. The second point was the gentleman that stood up, I think his name was Richard, and I apologise if I get your name wrong, about the student union TLDs. And it follows on from a point that my short-lived staff member, Tony, depending on what's happening with ICANN, brought up, is that for any new GTLD or potential new GTLD applicants that are out there, the $185,000 is not the big part of this play. ICANN has mandated this is an extremely technical thing that they are asking you to do. There is EPP, there is dealing with registrars. They didn't just say you can run this out of a server underneath your desk. So with that in mind, a lot of your expense, a lot of what you're going to be doing is going to be in the actual management of a registry. And we did a session on this in Sydney about how important this particular part is. And I think it's getting lost. So if you're standing up here, quite honestly and candidly, if you're standing up here asking ICANN to adjust your $185,000 fee, you really have no business in running a registry, because it is an incredibly technical and incredibly expensive, at times, task that you're embarking on. So please remember that, if you're a potential applicant, that this is a significant thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I would just like to say, from my perspective, thanks very much for the thoughtful comments and questions. And you didn't see us furiously writing notes because we're trying to listen. But very good. All of this will be in the transcript. All the questions will be in the transcript of the meeting. And I know we had one prepared statement that would be good to get via email. And if anyone else had a prepared statement that they wanted to include, you know, we can certainly accommodate that.
And if you didn't have the opportunity to ask a question, please use the feedback form that you see in the welcome package. It's right on the back. Please use that.
Thank you.
Thank you all for the insightful discussion. So we'll have lunch now. And we will return to our discussion at 1:30. Thank you very much.